I woke early and listened to Claire breathe. She had her back to me, but she didn't sound like she was sleeping, so I rolled onto my side and used one hand to gently massage her neck and shoulders. Some mornings she ignored me. Some mornings we made love. And some mornings she wept. After a few minutes of no response, I got up and got ready for work. The kitchen was dark and cold. I flipped on the undercounter lights, opened the valve on the softly clanking radiator, and then set out the usual weekday breakfast for Claire and Kate: fruit, cereal, and yogurt. On Fridays, I had a chocolate croissant, cutting it in half for the two of them to share. Frank, the night doorman, had a taxi waiting by the time I got downstairs. He said good morning and solemnly handed me a few pieces of mail addressed to my son. It was a shock when I first received mail for Kyle about a year after he disappeared. A solicitation from some preteen magazine. I spent the day thinking about it and then knocked on the door of the building super, Mr. Dimitrios. Tears in his eyes, he admitted that he'd been intercepting junk mail addressed to Kyle for the past 12 months and turned over a shoebox full. I made myself go through it. Reggie Kennard, the detective working with us, had mentioned that the psychopaths who kidnap children will occasionally amuse themselves by sending mail to the victim's family. There wasn't anything unusual in the box. A friendly representative of the Direct Marketing Association, who I spoke to on the phone, suggested I simply scrawl the word deceased on everything and return it to the post office. Instead, I had Mr. Dimitrios continue intercepting it, so Claire and Kate wouldn't see it, and arranged for Frank to pass it along. These days, it's all solicitations for acne products and CD clubs and summer job programs and magazines like Maxim and Outside. The kind of stuff any 19-year-old might receive. The kind of stuff Kyle might actually be interested in, if he's still alive somewhere.